Hello, everyone, and welcome back. It's Richard Land for Set for Success, where we help you create a roadmap to transform your business, career, or life. Being in business is a challenge. Often, when I speak about the peaks, valleys, and detours that business leaders must go through to be successful, there are many things that happen. And success comes at a price tag. It's not always about money. Every business leader and entrepreneur I've ever worked with has gone through a hailfire of challenges. There have been many times when profits were low or non-existent, and they had negative balance and equity situations in their businesses, and not always by their own doing. For example, maybe there was a change in the tax laws, and important profits in the business that were going to be reinvested had to go elsewhere. Or there was a huge merger by key clientele, and where competitiveness and the whole competitive environment just changed, and as a vendor operator, you struggle to adjust to the new business reality. But sometimes the situation is due to a business decision by leadership, a decision to go in a certain direction that maybe just didn't work out. A business crisis emerged, one that triggered the need for difficult decisions, to do the best with what you have, to turn things around or maybe not be around. In the strategic planning business analysis space, and for all the planning and everything I've ever done, I've seen these scenarios many, many times. Getting into a business crisis is no walk in a park. Every family member, friend, and employee becomes concerned and stressed out. And as a business leader, you need to carry the burden on your shoulders. And you wake up at 3 a.m. or 4 a.m. thinking, what's going to happen today? Life takes its toll. If you have any life experience, business or personal, you know exactly what I mean. Stuff happens, and all you can do is respond to it the best you can. So what do in your business when there is a crisis? Sometimes you need to seek help. Maybe help to turn things around. And I think that's what our topic's going to be today in Set for Success, the turnaround, with my guest, serial entrepreneur and turnaround expert, Robert Hall. Robert, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Richard. Pleasure to be here.
It's great having you on the show. I was really quite excited to dial you in, so to speak. Even you are here with me in the studio, because I've been reading up a bit on your background that. But just to sort of kick things off, tell us a little bit about yourself personally.
Okay. I'm born and raised in Winnipeg, and I have a lovely wife of 25 years. We have four children. We've made our home here. We've traveled, but we've always appreciated where we've traveled, but always wanted to come back home.
That's pretty amazing. You know, a lot of Winnipeggers are sort of bred that way. You know, they go away for a while and then they do come back, but you've managed to stay here throughout your whole entrepreneurial career.
That's correct.
I introduced you as a serial entrepreneur because I think when you wrote me an email, you actually put that in your email. I'm a serial entrepreneur. When you say serial entrepreneur, I guess, what do you mean and what kind of businesses have you been involved in?
Okay, from a serial entrepreneur perspective, it's a matter of starting, being involved in businesses, buying them, turning them around, and having an exit strategy. So my very first foray into this was after I left a large company that had done an outsourcing engagement. I was part of the team that was in the outsourcing domain. I also was the fellow that stepped up to do part of the project management there. It was a great experience from my perspective, because it allowed me to first see what a transformation looked like from the inside, and I had the ability to understand by sitting with the executives what drives business decisions. At that point, I determined I needed a little more experience and education, so I left the organization that part to impart on my first serial entrepreneur aspect, which took me into being an independent consultant, helping other organizations go through outsourcing assessments. I did that for a few years, and I've been consulting for about 25 years, with a couple of times I've stepped into companies as an employee and found myself stepping back out into what I really like to do is this. The first time I did a turnaround, I bought a company that had been losing money for about 9 years and decided that I saw something in it that I was going to turn around. But it's interesting when you get into something like that you really don't understand who you are and what the issues are until you get inside a company. And if ignorance is bliss, I was extremely ecstatic about what it takes to run a company and do a turnaround, especially at the time I had a very young family and fortunately a very understanding wife.
Yeah, I bet you burn the candles at both ends sometimes. Is that the old expression? I burn the candles at both
Absolutely.
Ends. A lot of late nights.
Yes, yes it was. And I really enjoyed it. And once I got it turned around, it took about 24 months to turn it back into a profitable company. Then I sold it and moved out of that for a while, waited for the kids to get a little older, while I maintain the independent consultant role.
The independent consultant role. You know, you and I have joked around a little bit. Like, I've just met you, and you and I have joked around a little bit that our backgrounds are very similar.
Yes.
Because I'm now in the consulting field for 30 years, and similar to yourself, I've been in companies, I've been out of companies, but I like the independent role. It sort of fits my personality. Would you sort of say it fits your personality?
Yeah, it does fit my personality.
In what way?
Well, I like to fix things. So I very much go in, if I find a situation, whether I work with a small company or in a larger company with a department or division, there's a sort of a timeline or a shelf life that I have related to a situation. And I know what that is. I go in, I figure out what the problem is, I help fix it, I do some mentoring with the people, I work with a lot of great teams and individuals. And then when it's done, the boredom sets in.
Yes, and so you're not an operational guy.
Yeah. So I really like the challenge of understanding the analytics aspects and then rolling your sleeves up and implementing at that time.
Figuring it out.
And I think the nice thing about being inside and outside a company is when you're in a large company, you see a lot of structure and you have exposure to a lot of very smart people and disciplines, and you can take that wisdom and intelligence with you when you leave.
To another organization.
Yeah.
I find this absolutely fascinating, and of course I would. Industry-wise, what kind of industries have you worked in?
I've worked in financial services. I've worked in back office services, telecom, insurance, and information technology.
Yeah, so has anything been rooted in a specific space for you? Like, is there any, some people sort of when they go from company to company, they've worked as an independent consultant or with another consulting organization, they might be anchored in information technology, for example, or you mentioned outsourcing earlier on. So one of the first things that you experience, are you anchored in any particular discipline or is it more general?
It's more of a general. I think where companies sometimes would hire me is I've got a lot of experience in information technology from having run operations in large companies. So that gives you the foundation, and I think everybody needs to have some technology insights. But I'm not a technician, and technicians would be insulted if I said I was a technician. There's a lot of people that know a lot more about the technology. But I position myself as a business manager with a technical orientation, so I can be the kind of voice or the translator between business and technology. And work either at the very sleeve rolled up level, or do executive presentations, which I've done with CEOs and boards.
Yeah. So, and I guess that's why I was asking that question, because often when you're an independent consultant, you're anchored in something, but you can use that expertise in other places. And I think that's what you just said.
Yeah. It's very what I do is very industry agnostic.
Yeah, industry agnostic. We're going to talk about turnaround, but we're going to take a short break first, and then I think we should have a whole dialogue about what happens in a turnaround situation with organizations. This is Richard Land for Set for Success, and we'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm hanging out today with Robert Hall, or Rob. Do you prefer Rob?
It's either fine. Rob's fine.
Rob's fine. And we were going to talk a bit about the big turnaround. That's what I'm going to call it now, the big turnaround. But first, I think we need to step back a little bit. I mean, Rob, there's common challenges that businesses have, whether they're small businesses or big businesses. Maybe we should address that first before we start talking about the concept or ideas around turnarounds. What are some of the challenges that businesses have?
Okay. So in respect to turnarounds or crisis management, as it likes to be framed, according to innovation science and economic stats that I recently read, small businesses, which they gauge from 1 to 99 folks working in a company, in 1 year, about 10% of those companies are gone. And after 5 years, about 30% of those companies are gone. So if you're looking for the good news, there's a 70% survival rate. The bad news is the 30% of people that have lost their companies. And personally, I think about the emotional and the financial drain that has on people and their families and how difficult that must be. So that's a little bit heartbreaking. But the good news is you got 70%.
That are still around.
Yeah. And there is even better news around the problems. The better news around the problem is there's commonality. If you look through the threads, there's really three things that tend to happen. And I've experienced this myself when talking to companies and in the numerous readings I'm doing. It really comes down to the management doesn't have the skills or the vision to really move the company forward. That's the first one. The second one is poor financial planning. And the third one is an unbalanced capital or undercapitalized company. And when they talk about, going back to the first one, when they talk about the vision or the knowledge, a lot of people that get into running a business, it's their first time. And they may or may not have business education, but you're really not understanding who you are and your strengths and weaknesses and challenges until you get into it and roll your sleeves up. So you need to understand that. And that just, you learn that on the job.
Yeah, I find it's interesting you talk about the strengths and weaknesses and learning it on the job. I find when dealing with other professionals or people going to small business, they're not always aware of what those are, or as you sort of, or which you've implied, or the other pieces is they actually think they're strong in something and they discover that they're not at all.
Yes.
It's actually a weakness. So they fool themselves into thinking that they actually have that specific ability that's required.
Yes, and I'm guilty like everybody
else. Sure. Everybody is.
Yeah. So I think the key there, Richard, is to find out there's times where you know more than you think you do, and you should try and step up more. And there are times when you know less than you think you do. The challenge is to figure out what is when.
What is when, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And going through a company myself, growing them and turning them around, I learned a lot about what I do well and what I don't. And it's usually in the rearview mirror. And hopefully it was a small bump and you still have time. But that takes you to the second point. As you're learning on the fly here of how to run a business, sometimes it takes longer to figure out what your issues are personally as you're growing, or your company, or the company in the industry. You don't have the insights or the discipline or the experience or the aha moments yet. So that's where you need a lot of capital. And that's where financial planning and having capital in the business buys you time. And it's not everything, but without cash, as they say, cash is king. If without short term, there is no tomorrow. So you need to have enough cash to get you through your learning period, your growing period, the bumps in the roads, or the hit the ditch as you go through it.
Yeah, what might actually happen. And I guess that's what you mean by capital in the business, actually having that safety net of finances available to you.
Right. And there's ways to do it in terms of figuring out if you have enough cash. And a lot of people do not do this until they get into a crisis. But it would be really beneficial for companies, large or small, if they spent time going through what's called the 13-week cash flow model and really walking through the daily receipts of what comes in and what goes out, and mapping it out and seeing if it's really going to work out for you. That is a key tool in crisis, but if you use it ahead of that, you may help avoid the crisis at the same time.
So I suspect a lot of my listeners not have heard of the 13-week cash flow model. I'm just wondering if you could explain it a little bit more, in a little bit more detail. Is that a possibility?
Yeah, I can do that.
Yeah, please.
So a 13-week cash flow model in crisis management or turnarounds is a standard model that people use. And what you're doing is you're mapping out, as the title says, for the next 13 weeks, a quarter.
Okay.
Looking for next quarter of all the money that's going to come into the firm and all the expenses are going to go out of the firm. And you're really doing a day-by-day analysis of the positive or negative cash flow. And you map that out from today for the quarter to see what it looks like. That tells you, if you're done accurately and honestly, what the future looks like and whether you're going to cross that threshold of being able to manage your obligations and survive.
And I suspect that based on what that tells you, there would probably be certain decisions or actions you may or may not have to take.
Right. And we're now getting into the crisis management aspect of this.
Yeah. And I didn't want to go too far in that because I think that'd be great for another segment, but maybe what we can do is roll back to that, or we can, because you also said the third thing was being undercapitalized. So what do you mean by organization, small or large, right?
Yes.
Would be undercapitalized.
Well, undercapitalized means you do not have enough working capital or day-to-day capital.
Okay, so it ties into your 13-week analysis.
That was your 13-week. But there's also different aspects. You could have the unbalanced capital. In an unbalanced capital situation, you have too much debt. And then you have debt payments and the obligations and the interest payments. And if your revenues start to soften a bit and you can't service the debt, you could be taken down by an unbalanced capital situation.
Yeah. And okay. That could be a particular situation, yeah.
Yes.
And what might be another one?
Just general undercapitalization is not having enough funds in the bank to deal with your current or future issues. If let's say you're a seasonal business or the market slows down, do you have enough buffer? And the challenge is trying to figure out how bad the situation is going to be and how much of a buffer you're going to need. But the rule of thumb I have from protecting the downside is whatever you think it is, double it.
Double it, yeah. So right off the bat. So right. If you're thinking it's going to be 6 months type of buffer, you need 12 months.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's, you know, it's interesting. It almost sounds, I hate to say it, common sense, but it's not. But it almost sounds almost like what you do in your business, you should do in your household too. And the whole idea that you should have like 2 years of savings and all those kind of things.
Yes, exactly. Because when you're at home, you have assets, liabilities, and cash flow. And at the end of the day, if you don't have enough money to buy something or pay the bills, you got to do something about
that. Yeah, you've got a crisis.
So you pick that up and you get in the car in the morning, you go to your office. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
So it is common sense, but I think part of the challenge is especially in small businesses, people are wearing so many hats trying to do so many things. They're not working on the business.
They're often working in the business.
In the business, right? Yeah. Instead of on the business, yeah. Right? So you're not spending your time doing those things.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, I think we should pick up with the whole idea of crisis management and turning around a company. Okay. Richard Land for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm hanging out with Rob Hall today, and we're talking about businesses, but we're talking from a different perspective. We're talking about from a turnaround or crisis perspective. And if you just tuned in, the last segment, we're talking a little bit about the common challenges from everything from management skills to financial knowledge and to being undercapitalized. Rob, I think maybe what we should do first is maybe define what a crisis is. Let's go with a bit of a definition. In business, when we're talking about a business crisis, what do we mean from our perspective?
Okay, so, and that's a great point, Richard, because not everything is a crisis.
No, it's not.
So sometimes there's transformations, there's tweaks, there's daily problems. But crisis, by my definition, which is really a hybrid of an industry definition, so I'm not taking credit for inventing this here.
No, it's all good.
It's a situation that really severely threatens a company's existence, where the timeline for action and decision is really short.
Okay.
You're running out of runway here.
That's a great analogy. You're running out of runway.
Right. So wheels got to come down and some decisions have to be made and got to pull the nose up a bit here. You may have, the crisis may be, I should look back up. It's not going to stand up and say, I've got a crisis. It's not going to sneak up on you and say, boo. It's going to show up in little different ways. Might have to start laying off staff or figuring out which bill you're going to pay. Worry more about stuff that's coming in terms of receivables. So that's really where you start to see small signs of these things happening. So,
and I think that's the kind of things, we could probably just put it down very layman almost. You know, you got so much money coming in, you got so much money going out. If you got less money coming in and more money going out, you've got a crisis.
Yes.
Right? Yes. Would that be okay to sort of just paraphrase just like that?
Yeah, that's much simpler.
I like your runway analogy. I've always liked the whole idea, especially considering what it takes to actually fly a plane. There's a flight plan. So that's a whole other story. Yeah. Are there stages to a crisis? I mean, I know I just sort of simplified it. Was that the stage you were talking about, or are there key stages?
There's key stages, and there's a four-stage approach. The first one is what's called a relevancy crisis or strategic crisis. The relevancy is related to, is your product or service as relevant as it has been in the past?
Fair enough. Right. What if the market's changed, right? And they're not buying it anymore.
Yeah, one example would be BlackBerry.
No, fair enough. That's a good
example.
You know,
it had a really good market share and a really good product, and as we moved along, it became less relevant. So you go from a relevancy crisis into a cash crisis. So what happens is you're selling less, or it takes longer to sell, or you have to do more marketing and more discounting, so your cash is less than it used to be.
Okay, so that's fair enough. Okay.
All right. So question is, can you adjust that to turn that around, or can you adjust your infrastructure lower to still create enough money?
Yeah, and so if this downward pressure, for example, in my monologue, I use the idea of competitiveness, the mergers within industry, which makes the vendor operator far more competitive, which might push down what you can actually charge for your product or services.
Right.
In turn, we could create a cash crisis, right, where you might have to go into some cost reductions approaches.
Right.
Anyway, sorry, I'm getting ahead of the game.
No, that's good.
I get excited.
That's good. No. And the cost reduction process is, you may not be able to reduce costs enough in order to get the structure down in order to be cash flow positive. And as we all know, it buys you time when you cut costs, but it doesn't buy you prosperity.
Yeah.
So this is where you're into a crisis of trying to stabilize, because you're just trying to buy some time. So, and after the cash crisis comes a liquidity crisis, right? And you start having to figure out how to make payments. And after that, if you don't handle that well, then you're into solvency issues.
Okay. And so that becomes a huge, bigger one. You've talked earlier in the, and I don't know if we're able to respond or answer this question, but you talked earlier about 30% of businesses over a five-year period roughly fail and 70% succeed. Do that 30% sort of go through these four stages that you talked about?
I think the four stages, yes, Richard, are common.
Yeah.
It's a matter of the degree and the speed. It depends on what kind of company you are. So, for example, if you're in a manufacturing company, you have high capital costs. This could be a deeper and faster pain.
Yeah.
If you're in a services business, you may not have the same capital costs. You may be able to ride it out. It's easier to lay off people than it is to sell or get rid of machines. From a moving point of view, it's still painful when you have to do that, and the end result could be the same, but yes.
Okay, so there are a lot of variables that go when we look at what happens in business and these crises when they do show up.
Yes, there are. And there's also commonality, though, which is the good thing about this, right?
Okay.
You kind of go through the same stages of decline, and then you would go through the same phases and approach to recover.
Yeah, okay. So then it almost sounds like you're playing a reversal.
Yes.
Right? Okay, so that's sort of the way to put it. So what are some of the things that an organization could do to mitigate these particular challenges?
Okay, so let's say the crisis has evolved, and you're now trying to assess where you're at, and you know I have a problem. So the first thing you do is you set up your 13-week cash flow, trying to figure, okay, what is going on from a cash flow? But you're doing a multi-disciplined approach. So you're going to look at strategy and operations and processes and marketing and sales. But the key in the short term, Richard, is you've got to get there. In order to get there, you have to have enough cash. So when you're doing this diagnostic review, the first thing you're going to focus on is cash. Job one is survival. Hmm. Nothing else matters. So you want to take your limited resources and put them on making decisions about things that are going to make your business better today to survive. It's an emergency procedure where you really narrow the focus. That's what you're going to do. Now, as you're going through this 13-week emergency phase of trying to stabilize, you're going to start doing things where you cut the obvious and the easy.
Okay, the low-hanging fruit, so to speak.
Right,
yeah.
Because it's about getting money in the door.
Yeah.
Right. And 13 weeks, the model that we use is about enough time to get through an emergency. So within the first 2 weeks, you're kind of looking at it and you have a decision point that says, will this thing survive? If you think it, yes, you move forward. At about 8 weeks, you should be getting some stability. In about 13 weeks, you should get your emergency steps in place. But you still have another 6, 12, 24 months of trying to get the crisis to go away and turn the company around. Now, that industry standard, but that depends on what the issue is, right?
Yeah.
But it's not short.
Yeah.
And it's not easy. And you really got to focus up right up front on the cash flow.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to look at it dynamic wise between a family business versus a business that, I guess I'll refer to it as a non-family business, and the different dynamics in that perspective. Because often I would think that the small business owner whose family is very entrenched in the business, it's a very emotional thing.
Yes. So I've experienced that at a couple of times. The corporate meetings tend to happen at the Sunday dinner table.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. So not only do they not leave it at the office, but the staff follows them home. And even if the staff doesn't live with them, they come over for Sunday dinner. And that's very difficult. I've seen that when there's staff on the payroll that is family. And it makes it difficult, and it clouds the decision-making sometimes. And you can see the emotional pain, and sometimes people can't get past that in order to make the right business decision.
Yeah, I know for myself, I've worked with a number of business owners who their family is embedded in the business. And the thinking that goes through, I mean, I think as a business leader, you always have difficult decisions to make. But when you're thinking about, you know, this could be your daughter's home, or their family, or your uncle's retirement, or, you know, these really do cloud the decisions. We're going to have to take a short break. When we come back, I think we should continue this conversation about turning around organizations in crisis and what they can do to solve the problem. This is Richard Land for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm hanging out with Rob Hall today, and we've been talking a bit about the turnaround and crisis management in a business, whether you are running a family business or whether you are running a business for somebody else. You know, there's lots of moving parts, a lot of variables that go on. Wouldn't you say, Rob?
Yes, it's a very complex situation.
Very complex situation.
In the best of times.
In the best of times. And I think one of the scenarios that we pointed out in the last segment, and even during our break we're still talking a bit about, is that, you know, often the business owner, especially a small business owner, they're not only supposed to be working on their business, but they're working in the business.
Yes.
And they're really connected to it. Right, emotionally, personally, financially, in every single way you can imagine.
It's a very demanding lifestyle.
Yeah, it is a very demanding. And yet, we're entrepreneurs. What were we thinking?
No, we don't know any better.
yeah, gluttons for punishments, I guess. But there is an interesting, life satisfaction when you do run your own business. I think every entrepreneur would say that. Now, we were talking a bit about crisis, like I said, and there must be approach. Like when you sort of recognize some of the things that we've talked about already, there must be an approach you can take to sort of start. I don't know if we should call it the turnaround or what kind of approach would you take?
Okay. So thank you, Richard. There is an approach, and the one I use is really an international standard on turnarounds. So I have not invented this. I'm not taking credit for this.
So there's an international standard on turnarounds.
Yeah.
That's amazing just hearing that. Okay, yeah. Go ahead.
So what I do is usually in my methodologies, I'll find something like that and I'll just make some tweaks to it. So I'm not going to take credit for this. This is a standard used across the world for turning around companies, large or small. So it's really a three-phase approach where you go through the emergency and the crisis and the turnaround phase, which we talked about briefly. We talked about job one is survival. Yeah. And we also talked about the 13-week cash flow. So that's the first tool. And I thought maybe for your listeners, we could bring it to more tangible stuff. They could actually, if they said, you know, I really have a situation I need to deal with today. Thanks for the hypothetical and the theoretical stuff. What would I do?
Give me some practicality.
Yeah. So,
yeah, go for it.
So the first thing I would do in approaching a turnaround is you got to get control. And get control really means get control of the financial situations. Get a sole owner of the checkbook. Get your hands on that checkbook. And unfortunately, you know, family business or not, this is time for a bit of a draconian approach. Like, we don't have time for lots of debates and negotiations and pet projects.
Somebody's got to be the hammer.
Right. So you're the hammer. And at the end of the day, you know, there'll be a few bruised egos along the way, but everybody will benefit from the turnaround happening. So get control of the checkbook. You got to limit the spending. You got to limit the authority of other people who are spending. People who used to be able to make cash calls on vendors or expenses, you don't do that anymore. You bring that home. One person's making that call, or a group, depending on the size of the company, but one entity. So they're really looking to do that. Beef up your reporting, and the 13-week cash flow is part of it, but there are lots of models and ratios that you can look at in order to see how you're doing. One of the early ones is your balance sheet ratio. When you look at the current assets and current liabilities, can you really deal with the problem you have today? And there are all sorts of other ones we could get into.
Yeah, it's interesting. I know. And obviously it goes back to the finances, because even when I speak to business leaders, the numbers don't lie. And so learning, and I want to add this in here, learning how to read your income statement, learning how to read a balance sheet. Those two things. I don't know. Do you agree with that?
Oh, 100%.
100%. Because I meet a lot of business people that don't know how to read these
things.
Right.
And it's more than just sending it off to your accountant and getting your books done every year.
Yeah.
It's having an engagement. I have an accountant.
Interpretation.
Right. I have an accountant I've used since day one, since I went on my own. And he's a very important professional and personal friend, a resource for me. And he educates me all the way along.
Yeah.
And I use him for business analysis as well.
Yeah. And it's not just about getting your books done.
Right. And it's one of those things where I learned early that I'm okay with this, but I'm not an expert.
Yeah. You've also talked a little bit about stakeholders involvement. And I know I'm going to jump a little ahead on you there. What about stakeholder involvement?
Well, that's one of the second key. The first key is determining how probable is there a bankruptcy here?
Yeah.
Right, and then can we get the financial resources in order to survive? And if we can't have them internally driven, is there some bridge financing available? And that's where partially the stakeholders come in, but on a larger spectrum, stakeholders relating to the family members in a family business, the banks, you know, all your lenders, your suppliers, is really getting an understanding of what is their interest and appetite in a turnaround. Because if there is no interest or appetite in a turnaround, regardless of whether you think it can be done, there's no sense doing it.
Yeah, unless you have an angel come in, and I know that that's a whole other terminology, and we don't want to go and talk about angel investors, right. But somehow you win the 649, you know, you're probably in significant challenge.
Right, so let's throw the angel investors out because that takes time.
Yeah.
And throw the 649 out because that takes time. But what are we doing with today, right? Right, and that relates to, you know, you might want to go do more sales, but you're not doing that today. Today, you're really worrying about how to get through this. So you need to understand and manage the expectations of stakeholders. And the key is you put in an organizational change management approach to figure out who they are, what is their influence, what are their hotspots, where are they in relation to where you need them to be, and what are you going to do about them? Because again, if there's no appetite, then you're not going to go ahead with the change. Yeah. And you're also striving, sorry, Richard, you're also striving to, with stakeholders, is you want to put in your 13-week cash flow and get to a sense of no surprises. Then you get your credibility back, and then it's easier for you to move forward.
That, you know, that's actually really good advice, because everything in this situation gets anchored in the numbers. And then the second piece that you added in there about the stakeholders, you touched on organizational change, which you talked about in a way embedded in that is organizational structure, right? You're going to probably change your organizational chart.
Right. And that includes, when you talk about your organizational structure, to me, it also includes the third parties or arm length parties that have an influence, or you do with suppliers and bankers, as we mentioned.
The stakeholders.
Yeah. Right. So you really have to get messages out to them. A Rockefeller said, you know, the next to doing the right thing, it's letting the next best thing is letting everybody know that you're doing the right thing. So you've got to get that message out.
Communicate there, right? Have those dialogues, especially in markets that are changing and adjusting. You know, I use the merger acquisition that changed a market as the example in monologue. You know, in that type of situation, the market just might be delayed, and that's going to create a cash crunch for you. So what are all the things you can do to actually make sure that at the end of the time period that the market's delayed, you're still standing.
Right.
And for a small business owner, that's a possibility. Rob, before we go any further, if somebody wanted to get in touch with you, how would they go about doing that?
Certainly. They can call me at, my phone number is 204-797-1983 if they'd like to talk. Or my email is rob.hall@rkhconsulting.ca.
Yeah.
And if anybody just wants to have a chat, I'm happy to chat.
No, good. What are some of the other steps? Maybe we can just go through maybe one more step. And what was something else that might be a viable option?
Well, I think maybe I can bring it down a little more tangible as well for your listeners. If you find yourself in a situation and you've got to make some immediate changes, you want to really look at what expenses can you reduce or delay, and what receipts, you know, the accounts receivable can you expedite, and look at is there any favorable or unfavorable patterns occurring in this cash flow statement. And I'm still in this period, Richard, because without this period being satisfied, there is no tomorrow.
Yeah. So you got to satisfy the first period first.
So can you have customers pay sooner? Can you pay sooner and get discounts? Can you get rid of inventory?
This is a huge topic, you know, and what a show we've been having. And I think, you know, Rob, I think if people are interested in more information, you should probably reach out to you. If you had a final thought for our listeners, what would it be?
My thought is, if you find yourself in this situation, don't wait too long. I find that people tend to wait too long, and hope is not a plan. Yeah, but there is hope out there, and there are ways of doing this. There's commonality. There's people to help you. And the day you find yourself at the end of the rope, just tie a knot in it and hang on.
Yeah, there you go. I think that's great advice. Rob, thank you for joining us on the show.
Thank you, Richard.
I really appreciate it. Listeners, thank you for tuning in. And you know I'm going to ask this of you. If you have an idea, a question, or a thought, just send me an email at richard@setforsuccess.ca. And do remember to do your best. Invest in the success of others and make your journey count.